it was when you were young. Was the world so very old when you're like...
Good afternoon and welcome to Living Permaculture on KDNK. I'm Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest Nursery and Consulting in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Last month, I interviewed an urban forester from Toronto, Ontario. This month, we're continuing the urban forestry theme and zeroing in closer to home in Denver, Colorado. The Park People is a private 501c3 nonprofit working with communities to plant trees and improve parks for a healthier, more resilient future for Denver. Their vision is vibrant, thriving neighborhoods where people, place, and nature are integrated, connected, and mutually supportive. The Park People's programs include Denver Digs Trees, free and low-cost trees for homes, businesses, nonprofits, and schools. The Mile High Tree Champions, group tree plantings at Denver parks, schools, nonprofits, or affordable housing communities. The Community Forester Program, become a trained tree steward and join a network working to care for Denver's urban forest. The Tree Force, a paid 6 to 8 week program introducing pre-apprentices to urban forestry. And Park Legacy, celebrate loved ones or milestones with a tribute tree or paver. My guest today, Lindsay Cutler, is program director at the Park People, overseeing all these programs. Lindsay holds a Bachelor of Arts in Geography and Environmental Studies from UCLA and a Master's in Landscape Architecture from the University of Colorado at Denver. Prior to joining the Park People in 2019, Lindsay worked as a field ecologist on coal mines throughout the American West, and she owned and operated a landscape design build business, bringing sound ecology to the built environment. Lindsay, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Vanessa. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, some people, when they imagine Denver as being, you know, somewhere up in the mountains and quite arid, might be surprised to hear us talking about an urban forest. So can you define the urban forest or urban forestry?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the easiest definition is just trees in urban areas. But we like to think of it from a community and whole ecosystem perspective. Trees transcend all boundaries and require coordinated efforts to plant and care for them as parts of a larger forest ecosystem. And a forest is so much more than the trees, right? It's the meadows and the rivers and streams. It's the animals and their essential needs of food and shelter and safety. And in an urban context, this includes us, our homes and buildings, our streets and sidewalks, and all the urban elements too. So when we think of the urban forest this way, it becomes a community responsibility to plant and care for the trees that fall within our spheres, not just a nice-to-have thing.
I like that. So interweaving the human element along with the natural element of the trees themselves.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, even though this might be redundant for some listeners, I think it would be worthwhile for us to sing the praises of all the environmental benefits of trees. So will you list some for us?
Absolutely. I could go on and on. There's just so many benefits that trees bring. I think I'll start out here really with sort of the climate crisis that we're all facing. You know, here in Colorado, when you think about heat and unpredictable storms, trees address both of these really critical and important concerns. Mature trees provide enormous cooling benefits. The shady side of the street can be 15 to 20 degrees cooler than the sunny side, which can be the difference between uncomfortable and deadly during heat waves for our most vulnerable populations. And we don't always think about trees as air conditioners, but they totally are. They provide so much more relief than just the shade of a building or structure because of all the moisture that they're evaporating from their leaves. They're truly like living swamp coolers, which in our arid cities is the most effective form of cooling. And then they offer their storm protection benefits too. So an example might be evergreens that are planted along the north side of a building can buffer against cold winter winds. And any tree planted will slow the flow of rainwater during intense storms. So that will ultimately lead to less flooding and fewer pollutants getting washed into our creeks and rivers. And I mean, like, we need trees everywhere, right? I mean, the sun and the storms aren't picking which neighborhood to hit the hardest. And so here in Denver, we have these massive gaps in our tree canopy, with some neighborhoods having 6 to 7 times fewer trees than others. So when you look at a map of tree canopy coverage and you overlay that with a heat map, the connection is really clear. It's just how much trees are cooling the city. So a lot of the work that we do here is trying to bring our neighborhoods up to our city's baseline goal of just 16 to 20%. Like you said, we're an arid city. We don't naturally grow trees, so we don't have these tree canopy goals that are, you know, 33, 35% like some of our eastern cities. But even getting to 20% is a big challenge in Denver. So we know we need to keep planting. And we also need to plant in areas that do have thriving tree canopy coverage, just to keep replacing that resource and growing for the future.
Nice. And how does the urban tree canopy correlate with wealth and income? Because you hear that neighborhoods that have more trees planted tend to be neighborhoods with more wealth and income. But what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Do you plant the trees and then the wealth and income follows? Or is it just that those neighborhoods have gotten more of the tree canopy attention?
This is a great question. And this is something that we teach on during our Trees 101 class and our Community Forestry series. Trees truly tell the story of wealth and power in our city. This pattern of what we call low canopy, which are just neighborhoods with much less tree coverage, can be traced back to redlining, the racist housing policies of the 1930s that drove investment away from places deemed hazardous, which were just places where immigrant communities of the time were living. And these areas today have these massive wealth gaps, like sometimes of up to $150,000 per year difference. And they lack quality infrastructures, such as recreation centers, grocery stores, parks, and trees. So not surprisingly, these communities today are more Black and brown, so there's a real racial injustice issue here, too. It's not just that wealth and trees correlate. It's that there's all these other health and quality of life factors in play, too. We see higher rates of asthma, incarceration, obesity, and stress. We truly feel, and the data supports, that trees get at the root of a lot of these problems, from heat and air quality to mental and physical health to community building and crime. And it's not necessarily like a chicken or an egg. It's our policies and our systems and our structures that have led to these differences that correlate to the lower tree canopy, and having lower tree canopy then feeds all of these negative health impacts.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyone interested in more of this topic, I would recommend the Bioneers program number 276, their podcast. It was Urban Forests, a Nature-Based Solution to Climate Breakdown and Inequality, that was really fascinating to listen to. And one of the points they emphasized is something I have come across in my career as well, that it's not enough just to go around planting trees. You have to factor in a plan for maintenance. So can you talk about the importance of maintenance programs for trees and how that also relates to the health of a community to take care of trees?
Absolutely. First of all, I thought that was a great episode, and there were just so many great points that they made in there, and I would recommend everybody should just go listen to it. I thought Brett Kincairn, who's the Boulder City Senior Advisor, and Samira Malone, who's the Urban Forestry Program Manager at the Urban Sustainability Directors Network, just had so many hugely valuable things to say. And I think Samira in that podcast episode says it really well, that there's just systemic issues that affect an individual's time and ability to care for a tree. There's place-based issues that have resulted in poor soils and harsher growing conditions. And there's strong and valid opinions that trees are expensive and destructive and gentrifying. And that all goes back to that early care, that planting and placement and selection. And so they're avoidable problems, but they're real. And so without programs and partnerships in place to help address these issues, like I said earlier, of anti-displacement and hunger and soil health and tree establishment, Tree planting programs alone run the risk of actually losing community trust, which then damages perceptions around trees in general, which, like I said, we need for our public health.
This seems like a good opportunity to circle back and talk about the two training programs, so the community forester program and then the tree force. So it seems like the people that are trained in those programs then go back to be an ambassador for their neighborhood and lead their neighbors on taking care of the trees there. Have you seen that happen?
Absolutely. Sure. So our community forester program, just for context, we're trying to think if we're in the 23rd, maybe the 22nd year of running the community forester program. And that was developed really in response to the city and the park people talking and realizing there was a need for more skilled volunteers in the urban forestry space. We were hoping to just build a cohort of people who were passionate about trees and were armed with a little bit of knowledge to go out there and help spread the word and also help show up. Right? We have volunteer events throughout the year. The city also runs some volunteer events, and to be able to call on people who know what they're doing to come out and to be able to be leaders in the communities and at these events is really powerful and has expanded our capacity throughout the city. It's deepened our relationship with the city, and we like to think that it's created its own community here of people who can bond over their love of trees. And it really does bring in a diversity of people, too, because people, you know, of all backgrounds and of all, you know, passions and interests can still share that same passion for trees. And that program for us gave us this confidence to launch our Tree Force program. And Tree Forest was just born in 2022, so it's relatively new to us, and it's a pre-apprenticeship that runs for between 6 and 8 weeks, depending on the season, and it's really intense. It is a combination of classroom and field work that a small cohort of individuals are paid to go through with the ultimate goal of training them for careers in tree care. So we're going way beyond what our community forester curriculum is and diving into tree climbing and chainsaw use and chipper use and rigging and not so highly technical things, as well as diagnosis and plant health care. And so these programs serve different functions within the community, but each of them are part of this whole community forestry that we try to practice, where we're trying to cultivate and create opportunities for anybody, regardless of their experience or really their ability or time to commit, has a way to get involved in urban forestry, whether that's coming out for an afternoon and supporting us at a volunteer event, or becoming a community forester and coming out throughout the year to support us, or really getting training and going out there and working in the industry and dedicating your, you know, your life, your professional life to trees. So we're trying to meet people with where they're at when it comes to the urban forest.
I love that. Early in my career, I definitely would have wanted to join a program like that. On the East Coast, I joined a Citizen Pruners program in New York, and that was really inspiring. But I love that you're training people to get into the industry and maybe to teach them passions that they didn't even know that they had. So that's really exciting. How do the park people's and the city of Denver's goals correlate?
This is something that we are asked a lot. So we are not the city, and we're not officially affiliated or funded by them. However, they are our super close partners and allies in this work. Municipal trees, I don't know if you know this, but they only make up about 10% of the canopy. So while we can and do work in that space of public trees, we also work where they can't. We can work in the spaces where the other 90% of trees live. So to reach that canopy goal of 16 to 20% citywide, we have to work together. We partner with them on all five of our urban forestry programs, from permitting street trees through Denver Digs Trees, or teaching through Community Forester, They teach pruning and host interns through the Tree Force pre-apprenticeship. And then we plant in parks through Mile High Tree Champions and Park Legacy. And I mean, really, because trees do cross all boundaries, physically even, you know, we get to work with all sorts of people and agencies. And it's one of the really fun parts of the job. It's just getting to know people all across the city who all have some tangential relationship with trees.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that you have the advantage of being able to work where the city can't. I love that. And so if you were to achieve the 16 to 20% tree canopy coverage in Denver, and assuming that all of the trees that are existing stay alive, do you know how many years in the future that would be?
I did the math on this about maybe 3 months ago because I was curious to have that answer. And it's well over 100 years from now. And maybe, I almost want to pull up my presentation. It's one of those goals that you look at and you think, if we continue this work at the pace at which we're doing it today, it literally is infinite. And yet we're living in this world of finite resources, right?
Right.
But Denver, just for context, has 2.2 million trees and is about 60% planted. And so even if, like, my math, my phone math right now were to just hypothetically then say, what if it was only at 50%? We would need, 4.5 million trees total, like 2 million more trees.
Wow.
And, you know, we're planting a couple thousand a year. The city's planting 4,000 to 5,000 a year. Like, the work will never end.
Interesting. And here, working in a more rural context, a lot of times we're able to do earthworks that harvest rainwater and snowfall by slowing, sinking, and spreading water. Have there been any innovative water use systems that you've worked with in an urban setting?
Totally, yeah. Another opportunity that we received in 2022, I'm trying to think if it was 2022 or 2023, was this community climate ambassador or Promotoris campaign. And we were one of five organizations that received this funding opportunity. And the goal was really to try to really understand what the perceptions and barriers were to taking action for climate adaptation and mitigation strategies. So the city really hired us to conduct a survey of specific neighborhoods that we were working in, that we grew these teams of community climate ambassadors in. And none of the results were jaw-dropping, right? There's a lot of people who feel apathy, who feel frustrated in the face of, you know, being asked to take action when there's a lack of corporate responsibility and government responsibility. You know, a lot of feelings of inertia and hopelessness, really. And so what we really did as a second step was engage with the community members and say, what would feel meaningful? You know, what are steps that would help to grow that hope, help to build resilience in your own home and yard? And as a result of that community work, we developed a rainwater harvesting project where we partnered with the Colorado Water Center and Groundwork Denver on, like, what is rainwater harvesting? What are the strategies and solutions? And taught a series of workshops. And then we offered rain barrels, downspout redirects, just trying to get the water from the roof, you know, to the garden bed. We installed rain gardens in areas where rain gardens weren't feasible for one reason or another. We helped to do some turf removal and put in some pollinator-friendly gardens. And it was a hugely fun project, and a lot of it has helped inform our tree irrigation work, too. But I think that earthworks and natural passive irrigation are such important topics to be addressing, and I think there's so much more water that falls from the roof than we appreciate, right? Because it's so arid, we think, oh, it's only going to be dropped. But it's much more, and there's huge potential in it, and I hope we're hopeful to continue this work, too, in 2026. So fingers crossed.
Right. Well, I love that, and I love the idea of those simple technologies also working to increase hopefulness and optimism and feeling like you can make a difference. And I hope that that continues to be a result or an outcome.
I hope so too. It's one of our core values at the Park People is really hope in action or hope in community, that when we work together and when we build these strong community bonds and, you know, take these small steps, we are building a more hopeful future together.
I love it. Well, I was hoping that you would share some upcoming important deadlines, although it seemed like we might have missed one of your upcoming important deadlines, but we have Arbor Day coming up, and everybody knows Arbor Day is a day that people often plant trees, and then another holiday that people tend to celebrate and do environmental-related things is Earth Day. But how much does the Park People utilize green holidays to spur along your work, and are there any upcoming deadlines or notices you'd like to share with the community?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, so I guess just to answer the last part first, we do have enrollment for our Community Forester workshop that is happening right now. And that deadline is that first week of March. We're technically cutting it off around March 2nd. So there is still a little bit of time to register for those workshops. And that's just a great way to get out there and, you know, build community and do something really positive during this time that I think a lot of us, you know, have felt can be difficult. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the other big question that you asked is really about Arbor Day and other days like Earth Day, right? And this year, Arbor Day is April 18th. We're super excited about that. That's the day we're having our big Denver Digs trees distribution. So it really does help us, the energy around trees and environmental projects and issues. It helps us get volunteers out there, and I think it helps us really just build more community around it. There's just great green energy that fills the city on those days. We have over 400 volunteers come out to support us during that week, and it takes our whole staff, and we have volunteers who lead the volunteer events who have been showing up for over 25 years to lead these events. So we really grow right from an organization of, 14 staff to 400 during that 1 week. And then here we are going, oh, I want to show up to this Arbor Day event and this Arbor Day event. So we're constantly trying to recruit, like, other community foresters and people to show up at all the other events around the city, too. But it's fun. I wish the Earth got every day, but we'll take the one and do what we can with it.
That's amazing. And then the deadline I was thinking that had already passed, but maybe people can consider if they're in the Denver area for next year, would be your application for trees. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. The deadline for Denver Digs Trees is February 15th. It's set that day every single year. We do run a really good wait list, so sometimes we extend the deadline. So it's always worth checking in on our website to see if applications are still open, if we've extended it at all. But if the applications are closed, there will be a notification link on there where you can sign up and get a notification in the mail just in case you want to apply for a tree next year. And we do have our Earth Day tree sale that's in conjunction with Denver Digs Trees. So even if you miss the deadline to apply for a tree, you can still show up and shop our sale. The trees there, they're on average $100. I think they may all be $100 this year, which is still a pretty deep discount from a tree that you would pick up at a nursery. A little bit more than they would be through our pre-reserve system. But all the funds go in and support our tree planting programs. So come out and shop the sale. We'd love to see you.
Okay, good to know. And on your website, theparkpeople.org, people can sign up to receive newsletters, and they can find your contact information and contact information at others at the Park People. And how can our listeners help your organization out in what different ways?
There's great ways to help us. If you're local, of course, coming out and volunteering, taking part in our programs, those are great ways to support us. And then, of course, if you're not local, donations are incredibly important to us. Individual donors really help get the trees in the ground and fund our operations and make this staff family keep working. And so if we want to keep this good green work growing, donors make this happen. So we welcome donations of any size and would be encouraging of that. We also do have some remote volunteer opportunities too. So we have people who help us with our tech platforms or help us to make outreach calls. So there are some ways that you could pitch in from afar. And if you're curious at all, I'm happy to answer any questions and just reach out using my email on the website.
Great. Well, once again, you can learn more about The Park People and connect with Lindsay Cutler at theparkpeople.org. Briefly, before we close, I want to inform our listeners on the Western Slope, we have free fruit tree pruning workshops coming up. You can find more information and registration at coloradoedibleforest.com/workshops. Now, Lindsay, do you have any closing words of reflection or inspiration you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think I really just want to bring it back to the people that trees are this incredible mechanism that we can bond on, right? Whether you love trees because they're beautiful or because they have all these great environmental benefits, the bottom line is they can bring people together. And I think right now that's what so many people are looking for, is ways to build community, to reduce loneliness, to reduce isolation, and those strong social bonds just from person to person and neighbor to neighbor. And we really feel like our work is an important voice in that field and are just so pleased to be a part of it all.
That's wonderful. Well, Lindsay Cutler, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule nurturing the urban forest to join us today.
Thank you so much for taking the time. It was so much fun talking with you.
And thank you also to our listeners for joining us today. I'm your host, Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Tune in next month on KDNK on the third Monday of the month at 4 p.m. for another episode of Living Permaculture. We'll talk to you then.